Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank at katelovingshank.com and theprayerprescription.com, and author of the Prayer Prescription series and creator of the podcast, Kate Loving's Prayer Podcast. My guest today is Diana Lang, author of the New World Library publication called Opening to Meditation. Diana's books, audio programs, webinars, and workshops have allowed thousands to access the physical, psychological, and spiritual benefits of meditation, drawing on her wide experience in studying spiritual teachings from around the world. Lang has put together a gentle, guided approach to meditation that is easy to implement. In Opening to Meditation, she demonstrates that meditating is as simple as breathing. There is no mystery to it. Her instruction goes to the core, avoiding the analytical theory, fixed rules, and intellectual razzmatazz that often intimidate would-be practitioners. Instead, she shows us how to reconnect with our foundational essence of soul and self, where peace and centeredness are always and everywhere available. Please join me in welcoming Diana Lang. Hello, Diana.
Hello there. I'm so happy to be on your show. It sounds wonderful, the topics that you cover.
Oh, thank you. I have so much fun, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And I loved your book, and I love your website.
Thank you.
I must say that it is amazing. It's an amazing phenomenon to see how meditation has become mainstream. My first question is, how does meditation help us to trust our innermost lives and ourselves, inner self?
Well, in a thousand ways, right? But like you were just saying, you know, meditation has become so mainstream. You know, as so many people are meditating now, it's become so popular, people know what it is. And back in the day when I first started teaching, you know, 35 years ago, you'd had to go to India. You had to go to an ashram, you know.
Right.
So
right.
It now, you know, it's all available, you know, online. And, you know, like I have meditations, you know, hundreds of meditations online people listen to from all around the world. So it's right there in your pocket. And that book, my book, is written in that way that you don't need anything but that book, or even you don't even need that, you know, to learn how to meditate. And the value of that is you find your true self, which is your question, is why to even do this, right? Is because it connects you to your essential self, to your truest self, what we are here to do, what we have to offer that is uniquely ours. And meditation helps you find that place in yourself and get to know that place and to honor that place.
Well, I have the feeling that you probably did go to India. And
I didn't. I have
meditation.
Not. Actually, I wish I would love to go to India, but I have had teachers from India, of course, along with every other country. I studied Zen Buddhism. I studied and am still studying all of these things, Christian mystery teachings and esoteric teachings and Kabbalah. I mean, just everything.
But I love your approach because it is simple and it is something that you can do anywhere and at any time, and as long as people get into remembering to do it, and that seems to be the crux of it. But what I was going to ask about meditation becoming mainstream, do you think people are just talking about it, or do you think that they are actually doing it?
Good question. You know, the answer is, of course, both. So much. I think it's just such a topic these days. It's become even trendy and in vogue. You know, there's Oprah's Super Soul Sunday, and there's, you know, people are watching these shows and hearing these ideas. Are they doing them? Some are and some aren't. But the fact that it's inside the culture the way it is, that's going to change the world. There are more people that are consciously living than there have ever been probably in all of history, of awake people that are really sincerely trying to find themselves, trying to reconnect to essence and soul selves, recognizing that we are that for each other, than there's ever been. And so it's a powerful, powerful time. But both are happening, I believe.
Yes. I just want to remind our readers that you have some wonderful meditation guided meditations on your website, and that's dianalang.com, D-I-A-N-A-L-A-N-G, all one word, .com. And, well, it doesn't pop up automatically. How can they get those meditations?
Well, they can. There's meditations directly on the website, but where the volume of my meditations are either on SoundCloud, which there's hundreds and hundreds of them, or to go on my Facebook page, and they can, you know, get them, but they won't see the list. SoundCloud is where they're kind of stored. So if you download, that's a free app. All of those meditations are free, so people can listen, you know, as many times as they want to. Through SoundCloud, and then if they want to be notified, they can go on Facebook, because I say, you know, I put up a new meditation, I put up several a week, you know, and it's just so powerful, because some one of those meditations might be just the one that, you know, we might be needing right then, of how to make a decision, or how to get still, or what is the breath, and all these kinds of questions that I answer inside these meditations.
Oh, that's exciting. Thank you. I did not know that. So
yeah.
I have an iPhone. I will, as soon as this is over, download that app and get going.
Oh, you will love it. You know, I really genuinely, sincerely want people to meditate, and I make it as easy as possible, and that's how that book is written, if you noticed. It's really a package where it's all right there. The whole book is a meditation, and so they're already meditating while they're reading it. Then, you know, they're learning about meditation at the same time, and there's guided meditations that come with the book, specifically to the book, which are very, you know, they're produced and beautiful, perfect meditations. The ones on SoundCloud are live meditations, so they're not, you know, all produced, but they're beautiful and wonderful experiences in their own right.
Thank you for that. That's very exciting. So in the process of meditation, how would you suggest people let go of the thoughts that go through our minds? I mean, I'm talking about letting go. Obviously, you can't get rid of all of your thoughts, and that's not the point of it. But it seems like sometimes they become overwhelming, and people think that they're doing meditation wrong because of all the thoughts that suddenly bubble up.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the greatest problem. When you first meditate, and even when you've long-term meditated, that is going to constantly arise, are the thoughts. And you learn to, in time, you learn to kind of love that kind of cute little ego mind that always is thinking, you know, because that's its function, is to think. And you forgive it, you know, and you start to entrain the brain in a way to the soul versus the brain kind of running the show. And so what will happen when you're meditating in the beginning is, you know, you're going to have thought, and that is going to happen. And so once you realize that that's just going to happen and that's not unique or a problem even, then you don't need to. Then we stop judging it, right? And we then, because the judgment actually makes it last longer. So if you just sit with thoughts, whatever they are, and breathe, and I call it looking for the spaces in between the thoughts, you know, where you can pause and find that spaciousness that is between the breaths, that is between the thoughts, that is where God lives. You know, that's that great big, you know, universal space.
Yes, you were saying that the heart of meditation is supreme stillness, but those moments don't always come, or I should say they don't come all the time, but when they do come, it is an amazing experience. And like you say, it's like between the space between the thoughts and the pausing and the reflecting, and the fact that you are taking that time to sit and meditate every day, I know for a fact, because I've experienced it, the thoughts tend to soften, and they're not as loud.
Right, and your whole day will change then too, because what happens when you meditate is you're doing a spiritual tune-up. You know, you're starting the day, let's say, setting the tone for your day to line up with the soul before you've even ventured out into the day, and so the day begins to match the soul's direction rather than the ego's direction. And that is a joyous state when that starts to happen. And what I call that is just being in flow, you know, because when we're not in flow, you know, we get a ticket on the way to work. And when we're in flow, you know, we can't get, you know, we get 35 things done on our to-do list in, you know, an hour and a half.
Right. And the fact is, you're more in that vibration of love, which is the most important thing in this lifetime. And by operating, having your whole operational system flow out of love, you just basically can't go wrong. Very healing.
Exactly. Yeah, and it starts to put meaning back into the life so that we're not, you know, I think a lot of people are depressed. You know, I mean, I forget what the statistics are of how many people are on antidepressants and anti-anxiety and, you know, all of these medications to help us feel better, right?
Yes.
But,
right.
You know, and, you know, and sometimes very necessary, sometimes just something to make us feel better, just like alcohol would do. You know, it's like the whole range happens, you know, from wonderful, the gift and miracle of medicine and the overuse of medicine. But I forget the number, but it's something huge, like 40% of the population or something of the U.S.
Yes.
You know, is taking
yes.
some kind of anti-anxiety or depression. And I don't believe that 40% of the U.S. is depressed. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think they just
right.
don't know how to feel all right. And so I think so much of, you know, meditation is when it connects you back, that you begin to find out what matters to you and why you're here and what your function is and are you doing it or are you not doing it, you know, and those kinds of questions that you ask, you know, we ask when we're teenagers, you know, why am I here and who am I? Those are good questions to keep asking throughout a life because there's new answers to those questions as we move along. But they're not extraordinarily different, you know, than those first
right.
answers that we come to. But how close are we living to that?
Well, what's interesting is the questions that we ask when we're young, and then we start to meditate, and then we can reach back to that essence, that self that asked those questions originally, and almost regain some sort of innocence in the process.
Exactly. Yes.
That's so
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah, I ask my students sometimes as a game to ask themselves, you know, what would you do for free? You know,
yes.
Because it tells you a lot about what matters to you and what you like to do. You know, what would, if you couldn't get money for your job, but what you could, you know, you would just give it as an offering. That tells
yes.
a lot about what our essence is.
Yes. And in this day and age, people are funny about wanting to give anything away for free, but basically, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like you say, I'm so impressed that you're giving away all those meditations on SoundCloud. That is just a beautiful gift. And
yeah.
if you want that, it shows your generosity and your desire to turn
yeah.
people on to meditation. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
So once
and
again,
really
I have to
from
thank
my
you
heart.
For that.
Yeah,
yes,
well, thank you for saying. And I also do for free full moon meditations every month where they are, we call them world service meditations, where we meditate on world assistance, you know, in different ways, for the oceans, for the governments, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And kind of seeing the well-being of our world as a one world rather than, you know, all these divided states, but to that we're all connected, you know. And when you
exactly.
And what's so amazing about these meditations is that there's people from all over the world on the call. So, you know, there's people in Japan and China and in England and France, you know, and lots in America, of course. But, wow, you know, you can really feel the matrix of that light grid, in a sense, or that consciousness grid around the planet.
Oh, that's wonderful. Especially
yeah.
at such a very potent time as a full moon. It's so...
Yes.
It directs the rest of the month, and as does the new moon. And to get
yes,
into that
yes.
wonderful vibration of the rhythms of the moon is awesome. So so people who would want to do that, do they get on your website for that?
Yeah, that probably on my website, they just email me, and then I will send them the link, or the phone number, actually, to call into from wherever they are. And, you know, people are on their phones, you know, at the ocean, you know, in their cars and at work and, you know, wherever they are, at home. But it's very powerful. It, you know, I've been teaching meditation for a very long time, and I
mm-hmm.
tried this because somebody asked me to. And I had done web versions of this as well. And, of course, live
mm-hmm.
meditations with hundreds of people. And I did this one on the phone. I thought, oh, you know, it'll be just a throwaway. It's not going to be anything. And there was about 40 people on the call from all over Los Angeles at the time. And it was the most powerful meditation I'd ever been a part of. And I couldn't figure out why at first. But what I think it is the distance, is that people are gathering from different places, and it makes a wider net, in a sense, of light. And so it gets super powerful. I mean, it's so powerful sometimes my whole body is reacting to it. I can feel the energy force coming through in a way that if there was 200 people in a room, I don't feel like that.
Oh, that it's because it's a combination of the full moon and so many thousands of people gathering together for that ceremony, as it were. And I wonder if it touches Kundalini energy, because it sounds like, you know, this energy is vibrating in your body, which is kind of like a Kundalini experience.
Yeah, it could be. I feel like it's just massive energy, though. I don't know if it's Kundalini specifically, but it definitely is a lot of wattage. And I run a lot of wattage through my body all the time because, like I was saying, if we're all in the same room meditating, even more people, I don't feel that degree of energy. There's something about the distance and people kind of reaching to and touch each other across, you know, space and time.
Wow. Yeah, because they're not all in the same time zone, and obviously they're not in the same room, but they're certainly, Wow, that's interesting. I want to get on those calls.
Yeah, you would love it. It's really, they're very, very deep, very profoundly deep. And you can do it in your yard and, you know, in the backyard or in a swing or any place that you happen to be and just hook into this. They're little half-hour meditations, you know. They're just wonderful.
Yes.
So.
Yes, they're so cosmic. That's very, very interesting.
It's like getting plugged in.
Yes, literally. Obviously, there's really no way of explaining why it works like that.
Yes.
You know, or how it works.
Well, it's energy,
really,
right?
No,
everything's energy. And, you know, it's like when you know that the full moon, you know, there's millions of people meditating on a full moon anyway, all around the planet, then there's, you know, we sort of know that. And when I do full moons live here with just people in the room, you know, we're hooking into that same world energy. But I think there's something about being on the phone that links it through the airwaves, in a sense, that's actually more close to what actually is happening in meditation in the first place. So I don't know if you've ever meditated in a plane, but it's interesting because there's this, you know, you're traveling over, you know, the planet in an altered kind of lifted up state, literally, you know, physically lifted, above the fray of the noise of the world, you know. It's like how a lot of the teachings say, teach, you know, always meditate. Well, they don't. You don't always have to, but they recommend meditating like at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.
Right.
Because people are still sleeping. So you're away from the noise, you know, of thinking.
Yeah, there's a quiet at that time, a stillness that it might be easier to access at those hours.
Right. So I think something happens with those phone calls that does that, that increases the light exchange experience that happens whenever we meditate, but that we can feel a little bit more in that format for some reason.
It's linking people up in a way, energetically, in a way that is not, it's just a little different. Yeah.
Right. Right.
So you you talk about the witness part of ourselves that we can access during meditation, and I think the witness is such an important aspect of how to navigate our way through this sometimes confusing world. Can you explain to us how meditation does it and how important it is to you?
Yeah, to be a witness of your own thinking is very interesting. You know, there's this old teaching in the ancient teachings that says, you know, we are not our thoughts. You know, and so who is thinking? you know. It's an interesting thing, and when you meditate, you learn to detach from the gravity, and that's a good word, the gravity of our thoughts, you know, that the importance of this has to happen, or I have this goal, or I want to be happy, all these needs that the personality is constantly creating. And we miss sort of like the undernote of our life. When I work with people, I do a lot of spiritual counseling most of the day long. And what I talk about in what I do is that I line up their soul with themselves. And I can feel like a tuning fork when that's happening and when that's not happening. And it's very exact. And that when we meditate ourselves, we learn to do that for ourselves, to be able to line up to our own soul. Well, in order to do that, the mind has to become still enough that it can be the witness of thoughts. Because the thoughts are true, I mean, they're what we're thinking, but they're not the undernote or the sort of soul spiritual note that may be why we're even here. You know, and so to me it's like there's always like a reason that we're incarnated, you know, to have this experience, to offer our gifts, whatever they are, and to learn what they are ourselves by appreciating ourselves and our own journey, and that our journey is, you know, I talk about it a lot, like, you know, our wound is our gift, you know?
Yeah.
That the very place we've been wounded the most is the action place of what our gift actually can be. And so much of us want to get away from our wounds, but you know that old saying, the way out is through, right? You have to go back actually right through that door and kind of claim the power that gets tied up sometimes in these old woundings. That requires witnessing. Yes.
Yeah, I think that a meditation practice can automatically hook you up with the witness, and you're watching your thoughts. After a while, you're watching your thoughts, but you're not really identified with them. And
right, like
while,
the Bible says, right? Be in the world, but not of it.
Well,
you know and what is the world
important.
But our own brains?
Well, not only that, but we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. So I believe that's what that biblical statement really means, that being in the world, but not of the world. Yeah. That is basically means that we are spiritual people, spiritual beings having a physical experience, that we start out, we don't start out at birth, you know, it's like that, there's like, as Wayne Dyer says, we have a parenthesis that starts at birth and ends at death, and then we go on. You know, we came in and we go out, and that's what that statement really means, I think.
Yes, that's beautifully said.
Well, not only that, but then when you meditate, that is what you are cued into. You suddenly realize that you are a spiritual being, that you are, first of all, a spiritual entity, not a physical being. And that is huge, not only that, but the meditation integrate your physical, your spiritual, your mental, and your psychological. All four of those things are somehow healed, no matter how many wounds you have.
Right, exactly. And so what better gift, and this is why I teach it with such passion, is because I can't think of anything that's more valuable than the practice of meditation for all the reasons you just said and more, that it puts all the power in your own hands, you know, where you are able to manage your life, to learn your life, to learn yourself, to offer yourself, to contribute something that is, you know, what we are here to contribute. And so, you know, there's nothing like that. There's no other thing. And of course, like all good things, you know, there's work to it. And that is, you know, the practice of doing it, like all these ideas that are talked about in, you know, the benefits of meditation, which are so many, including physically and mentally and emotionally and psychically, you know, none of them will happen if you don't actually do it. You know, you can read books or take classes, but you got to actually still do it. And that's the hard part. And I think that's what I was trying to address, is to get people to actually try it so that they could have the experience, because once they have the experience, they will want to, because it's so life-changing. Even when, like you were saying earlier, that all we can do is think, and we're first encountered by this wall of thought, even while that's happening, it's having an effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't even matter, you know?
Well, and one of the meditations, you have three meditations on your website. One is the introduction to meditation. What you go through a huge amount of effects that meditation has on different diseases. And, first of all, depression would be one, because after a while you're just not depressed anymore because you're in tune and you're in sync. But there's the high, you know, your blood pressure, the cells that are working beyond our understanding anyway seem to come together and work better. You know, it leads you to eat better. It leads you to be more in tune intuitively with your habits that maybe you should think about lightening up on, like, you know, drinking alcohol or not sleeping enough or doing too much internet texting or whatever. You know, all these things come up, habits that you know aren't serving you, that take you away from the stillness and the quiet that helps you to access who you really are. So those things naturally just sort of fade away, and you become healthier.
Right. And it's just all by meditating. And, you know, I tell my students in the beginning, like when I teach workshops or if I teach a month-long class, you know, meeting once a week or twice a week or something, I just have them actually meditating for 5 minutes a day because, strangely, that seems like it should be so easy, but even that is not so easy. And in a group of, you know, let's say 50 people, you know, maybe 10 of them actually do it, the 5 minutes every day. And then, you know, 10 of them don't meditate at all except for when we meet and everybody else is in between. But what my point about that to them is that even just that 5 minutes, even any minutes, right, any minute dedicated to pure consciousness is healing to the self. And so it's not about volume or meditating for 2 hours or something like that people can't even imagine, but that just in 5 minutes a day they can start to change their life right now.
Yeah, I remember I was affiliated with the Self-Realization Fellowship more actively a few years ago, where after Christmas we would sit for the whole day from early morning till late at night doing the meditation. I could not imagine doing it, but I did it one time, and it was, wow, you get into a completely timeless state. You have no idea what time is, and it's really hard to come back into, well, first of all, in the holidays and everything, time is sort of elongated and changes shape anyway, so that when you come back, you know, you're more, you don't have to jump into work necessarily. But yeah, that was amazing to meditate that long. And I think, but like you say, by even meditating 5 minutes to begin, you suddenly realize how you are approaching your things that normally are upsetting or really freak you out normally. But with the meditation, suddenly you don't react that way at all.
Right.
And that is
it's always about love.
Yes, it is.
That's the bottom line, right?
Tell us more about this love thing. You know, I want to hear how
it's my favorite subject.
It's becoming more mine as well, because I think, you know, I've done a lot of studying and so forth over the years, and to me, all of a sudden, it just becomes apparent that love is the main thing. I mean, that if you can just concentrate on that and not on success or anything else, or abundance, or money, or anything, that the love is the connection to everything. Love is really it.
Right. And, you know, one of the things I ask all the time is, you know, what would love do? What would love say? You know, you start to, you know, and as a parent, you know, if you think of it as a parent, like with the child, you know, what would love do? What would love say is very might be a different answer than what a book might say. And also that love has many forms, right? Because love can be tender, of course, and kind and generous, but love can also be strict and hold the line, you know, like, you know, get out of the street and pull that child right out of the street. You know, they don't even know what hit them because you pulled them out so fast. And it could look violent, I suppose, but it isn't, of course. It's still love, you know, to, so it's like you have to, we have to ask, learn to ask ourselves, you know, sort of the high version of, you know, not what, you know, group thought is about, you know, correct action in certain situations, but what would love do? Because that answer will take you in to that core place in yourself, because it's really, we are an expression of that divine love, each of us. And when you ask that question of yourself, you know, we know that answer, what the answer is, that's beyond thinking and beyond, you know, societal rules. It comes from a deeper place in that well within us that is made and built from love.
Yeah, so you drop judgment, you drop all of these ways of being critical of other people, and those things are so important because in the presence of love, those things don't matter at all. In fact, they're in completely, they don't exist, basically.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and you know, and I was thinking when you were talking about also the SRF experience of Self-Realization Fellowship, that they're a wonderful, wonderful heart-based group. They're heart chakra-oriented, as Paramahansa Yogananda was so much himself, just imbuing heart energy. They, you know, when they would do those long meditations, what they're trying to do, well, there's a whole bunch of things that are happening, but one of the things that they're trying to do is to create remembered memory state, you know, the state of that higher consciousness. And that is why I have all of those meditations available on SoundCloud, because, and in the book, because I'm trying to help people feel a state that they can learn to recognize. And once they can recognize that state energetically, they can feel things that are like that and similar, meaning made from love. Because there's stuff out there that's, you know, that might, you know, I guess that could sound love or something, but it's really just ego or something, you know? It's like once you start to line up and be able to recognize divine love, you can recognize it in every and any form. I, you know, a good question to ask, I ask my students this, is, you know, if the Christ would come again, you know, or whatever version of that you can relate to, you could say, would we know it? Would we be able to recognize an elevated consciousness if it was right in front of our nose, if it didn't come in the shape or size that we think it should, you know? And when you meditate, yes, you would, because it's energy, you know, and what you're recognizing is embodied love.
Well, then Paramahansa Yogananda did write a book that has been published since long after his death called The Second Coming of Christ. And it's exactly what you just said, that the second coming of Christ is basically an inside job, as it is. And that meditating is the thing that Yogananda was really into was meditation. And when you read the autobiography of a yogi, that all those descriptions of going into the closet, which I believe was in the third floor, he was constantly in that closet meditating, and it's finding that stillness, and there's a biblical quotation about going into the inner eye, the third eye, going into the inner self. The whole idea is that you are accessing that Christ consciousness. And Jesus is, sir, I'm not a heavy Christian at all. I was raised Unitarian, and I'm actually not a Christian at all. I love all the religions, and I love to study them all. But the main thing about Jesus was that his sermon was love. His whole ministry was love. And that should say a lot about what that means to the world and to religion. But people don't get it. It's strange. Maybe they would if they meditated.
Yes, they would. Well, you know, the Dalai Lama says that if every child was taught to meditate at 8 years old, that we would have a completely different world in a single generation.
Oh, my gosh. I hope people are listening to that, because that is the only thing that's worth it at all. Now, tell us a little bit about
and I teach kids
space.
To meditate. They get it right away, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Sacred space is another one. That's very cool when people are picking out a meditation practice that they create a sacred space, which, as you say, it can be anywhere and everywhere.
Right. Yeah, well, I say a lot, sacred space is wherever you are, right?
Yeah.
But the chapter is about creating a sacred space more, but it is so true that wherever we are is sacred, and it's important to remember that because we can claim it as so and so be it, you know, so the place that you are in this moment, you know, is sacred by our deciding that it is. In a home or in an environment at work, you know, I have at my, where I work, I have like a little mini altar there, which is simply a candle, you know, and a little stone that I have that means something to me and some other little items that are around it. And every time I see that, look at it, notice it, I remember the sacredness of this space and of the work that happens in this room. When I was designing the room that I work out of all day, which where I do my counseling, I was had all these cabinets put in that were like wall-to-wall cabinets, and on the walls before the cabinets were put in, I wrote all over the walls prayers, you know, that are hidden.
So
you can't
cool.
see them, you know, but there they are.
Yeah.
They're imbued into the walls, quite literally, of only love in this space, you know, only goodness in this space, and so when the guys came to put the cabinets in, they were looking at me sideways, but I didn't care because it's part of my intentionality to create
yes.
sacred space with real action and intention and prayer, and my calling it forth, my evocation.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful. And
yeah.
So many years have gone by that you've done this, and your passion has only increased.
Yeah, it's true. It has increased. I've never thought of it that way, but it's really true. I've always loved this subject since ever I can remember, since when I was a little girl. But it is so truly, the more I understand it, the more I can't believe how big it is, you know, how big the subject is, how much it does in terms of, you know, I've been with people that, you know, have been in very dire straits at different times and seen them just have miracles, just absolute miracles by health, by life changes, by, you know, things that just didn't seem possible happening, all by bringing that consciousness and connecting to their true self and to, you know, to be effective, you know, to their own life, you know?
Yes.
So that everything
people...
matches. You know, from the inside out, that the inside and the outside of your life look alike. But the problem is, and this goes back to, you know, people's self-esteem, and that's what I do counseling about, is that, you know, we don't think we're worthy in the first place, and so we're lucky to have anything, or we want to get somebody else's because ours isn't enough, and et cetera, et cetera. But when you realize, when you start meditating, you start to realize that every single one of us is holy. And it changes the whole perspective.
Right. Oh, my gosh. You know, when you think about it, it's just when people are in the worst psychological pain, instead of trying to become distracted by whatever, television, going, you know, talking to friends or whatever, going into a room, going into their sacred space and being there for as long as it takes to wash it all clean, I think is the answer to intense grief, to incredible pain and agony that people often feel, or, you know, at some points in their lives, invariably, people feel these things. And meditation is the answer, or the sacred space, I think. Getting down to that, that's the answer.
Yes. Yes, and it really becomes kind of a fun thing to do. The sacred space aspect of meditation, first of all, it doesn't really matter because wherever we are is sacred, so it doesn't need to be an established place. But creating an established place in your house that you consider your sacred space is a very powerful thing to do. Plus, it's fun because you start to want to put, you know, a picture of, you know, someone that means a lot to you, or a feather you found on your walk, or things, or something you took from a workshop that meant something to you. And it begins, it becomes a gathering place that gathers energy and life force to things that are sacred, including yourself. And when you enter your own sacred space, it's like you remember, it's like walking into a cathedral, whatever your religion is, right? When you walk into like an old Italian cathedral, you feel it. You know, it's like this place, there's all that happens in this space is are holy things, and you can feel it, you know? And it puts you in a state, and it's back to that state thing again, that, you know, immersion of energies when, like when you went to the SRF thing, that's immersion. They're teaching a state. And then my meditations on, you know, on SoundCloud, those are teaching a state. And our altar that we make in our home, if we make one, or a sacred space that feels like that to us, creates a state.
Right, a state of sacred and holy alliance with what is, you know, the divine love. It's so awesome. I love it. Well, Diane, I had to cut this off. I hate to do it, or else Blog Talk Radio will cut us off. So I really appreciate it very much that to be talking with you about your wonderful book, and I will be promoting it as the weeks go on in various ways, and I'm certainly going to run right over to SoundCloud and check that out. So that is so awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and just scroll through. There's hundreds, and you'll see subjects that you might be interested in, that sort of thing. That's wonderful.
Sure.
Thank you.
I'm sure. I will promote that, but I'm sure I'll be interested in almost all of it. It's just so awesome. So I appreciate it very much. So I'm going to be playing The Fairy Ring by Klaus Jensen. And have a beautiful rest of your day.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.